This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover! Step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up out there, everyone on the internet that is listening to this, because it is a podcast, which means it's hosted on the internet, and it's the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco, Chris Brame, along with you. Plenty to get to today, including Georgia, well, sort of completing the revenge tour. They've got one more chance to do that coming up this weekend, but in terms of the teams that beat them last year, Georgia completing that revenge tour by beating Tech in some clean old-fashioned hate. We'll definitely talk about that. We will also talk about the Falcons and their big win against the Bucks. We'll also talk SEC championships. So plenty to get to on this edition. And, you know, I don't know if we'll be able to fit it in 30 minutes there, Brian.
I do like now that you're back to wanting to talk about the Falcons, because about a month or so ago, after they had lost to, it was the Panthers
loss.
Because that would have been, was that the third straight loss? Or maybe the fourth in five games, because they'd beaten the Jets. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you had said, I don't even want to talk about the Falcons.
Yeah, but we're back now. I went to that game this past Sunday.
And they almost blew it.
They almost did. But thank goodness that they were able to get that last touchdown there. And, yeah, Teron Ward would have definitely been the GOAT had they have blown it, because he fumbled that ball and Brent Grimes recovered it. But
and next thing you know, they were in the red zone.
That's right. But we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. But first, clean old-fashioned hate as Georgia goes over to the Flats and continues to dominate this series when the game is played in Atlanta.
Yeah, they haven't lost legitimately over there since 1989.
Are you talking about Jasper Sanks?
Yeah, I'm not counting. I mean, 1999, yes, is officially the last time that Georgia did lose over there, but legitimately they haven't lost a game over there since 1989. So now what Georgia has to do next year is get back to beating them in Athens, because it's been since 2012 since Georgia now has done that, since the Jackets have come over here and won their last two trips at Sanford Stadium. But we'll worry about that like 365 days from now, or a little bit less than that, because, yeah, 121-14 was the tally on the revenge tour this year, and that's bad news for Auburn this weekend, because now they are officially also a part of the revenge tour.
Right.
So, yeah, hopefully that does keep up Saturday in Atlanta.
Yeah, and looking at the Tech game, I'll say this. I feel like one player on each side of the ball really stood out. On offense, it was Jake Fromm. I thought he had one of his most complete games of the season, finding Javon Wims for a touchdown, finding Akil Crumpton, of all people, for a long touchdown. And there was the one time where he pulled the ball out from Nick Chubb and ran for a 15-yard gain. I feel like he always seems to make the right decision on those read option plays. He doesn't pull it out all that often, but when he does, it usually goes for a big gain.
He's been solid on that front this year, and 12 out of 16 for over 200 yards and two more touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And not turning it over was just a clean, solid, efficient day at the office. But I got to tell you, it was a couple of runs too that Sony Michel had.
Absolutely.
That touchdown run where, I mean,
he juked somebody. I mean, that Tech defender might be buried underneath Grant Field right now. That's how badly he got shaken out of his shoes.
Yeah, then there was another run, too, that was looked like, man, they should have had him for about a 3 or 4 yard loss, and he ended up, I mean, he might have even moved the chains at that point, or at least gotten like 7 or 8 yards out of it and got us into a second or third and a short after that. But just, yeah, the footwork that that Sony has, but yeah, I mean, it was pretty standard for what we've seen Georgia do all season long. I mean, the one thing about the last two wins over Kentucky and Tech, you know, unlike the Mississippi State beatdowns and the beatdowns over Florida and Tennessee, you know, I don't feel like the games have been decided at halftime, but, you know, in the end, the margin of victory and the final scores pretty much were the same. I did think that was a big 3 points Georgia got right there at the end of the first half
after
Tech had scored that touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, you get that field goal, and then you get the touchdown on the first drive of the second half to really kind of put that distance between Georgia and the Jackets. And talking about the offense, obviously, they had all things clicking there. The defense, Roquan Smith, if he's not the best defender in the country, I don't know who is.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to win the Butkus Award at the very least for a top linebacker.
Bednarik for the best defensive player in the country.
Because there was another, and he had one of those at, all the way back at Notre Dame on Wimbush, but there was one where Marshall had gotten out and was running on the edge, and it looked like, you know, okay, this guy's going to pick up a good chunk of yards. And yeah, I mean, Roquan comes from, like, the middle of the field. He'd been spying him and went and ran him down and hit him for a minimal or if any gain at all. And there was one of those big moments, too, I remember, that Notre Dame game with Wimbush, where all of a sudden Wimbush got outside, and you're thinking, all right, there's the first down marker. He's going to get it. And then there was Roquan to just hit him for about, like, a 2 or 3 yard gain instead.
And with his lateral, you know, sideline to sideline speed where you're running and you've got to keep your hips kind of square and you've got to keep your head up, so it's very hard to stay very fast doing that. But his lateral speed, that sideline to sideline stuff, might be the best I've ever seen. I mean, he might be the perfect defender against the option because of that. Because, you know, you're doing all that. You're playing assignment football, but you're also covering those gaps and stuff. And, I mean, he's just so quick that there were times when he was in the backfield, it almost seemed before the pitch was even complete.
And he's just a textbook tackler, too. Yeah. He's not missing anything. He's wrapping up. He's getting guys on the ground, and that's it. You're done. Forward progress is finished.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, had to have 3 tackles for loss in the first half, 8 solo tackles, 9 total tackles. I mean, he was leading the dogs on defense in every sense of the word there, and really – causing Tech to, and it wasn't just him. I mean, DeAndre Walker had a very good game as well. I think 2 tackles for a loss for him. But overall, Georgia Tech, this year was much different than last year. You know, Georgia Tech here in Athens broke a lot of big plays, and Georgia did not allow that to happen. And it just seems like from year one to year two, with a lot of the same players, Georgia has gotten substantially faster.
Well, that's another, you know, element, too, is Georgia didn't have Natrez Patrick in that game last year. And he had a huge game against them, 2 years ago in Atlanta. And so, you know, he was back, and he's one of the top run stoppers, too, in the SEC defensively. But that, you know, that was one thing I picked out about that Tech offense going into last week's game. If you look at a difference between Tech's offense from last year and this year, you know, they do what they do, and they do it well. And they're good at moving the ball and picking up chunks of yards on drives. But what they did lack this season was explosiveness, whereas they hit a lot of big plays last year, and that ended up being a big difference in that game when they came to Athens. But, you know, Tech's offense has really struggled on that front this season, and they were able to put together a couple of drives. I mean, the last 2 drives of that first half, remember they went for it on that 4th down and didn't get it. But it's just, you know, you're eating up some yards and you're picking up yards, but there's nothing there in big chunks. And it's just tough for any type of an offense to sustain a drive or eventually punch in points if it's just going to be, you know, 4 yards here, 4 yards there, and you're plodding along. And Georgia's defense came up with that big stop the first time. And then, you know, they had the left the guy wide open in the end zone, and that was it. It was the one bad play they had all day.
Yeah, it looked like there was some crossing up of some guys on that one, maybe just a missed assignment there. And that was something that, like you said, there didn't happen a whole lot, if, you know, at all, other than that instance in this game. I think one of the things I liked best about it was after the game, when Georgia didn't really go too crazy with the celebrations, and Kirby was asked about it after the game, and he was pretty simple with his answer. He goes, oh, we don't do that. You know, and it's kind of the ultimate sign of disrespect, I feel like, when a team comes into your place, like when Tech came into Athens and did all the stuff with the Hedges and everything last season. And for Georgia to be like, well, you're not worthy of our celebrating.
Yeah, so, and that's how it should be.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It feels just so disrespectful to one of your biggest rivals to be like, yeah, you're one of our biggest rivals, but when we beat you, I mean, we're supposed to do that, so we're not going to celebrate.
Right. I mean, Georgia hasn't lost there since 1999, legitimately since 1989. So if Georgia goes and beats Tech in Atlanta, it should just be expected that that's another day at the office for the Dogs, and they get the win 38-7, and they're going to hit the buses and head home, because there's bigger fish to fry now this week. And Georgia got home, and in time to watch the second half. So you think Auburn was playing, they had an entire half to go against Alabama in that Iron Bowl, and Georgia was already home from what ended up being an easy win by the time that fourth quarter came along. And Georgia played what, about the last, I was a little disappointed that we put Eason in and didn't really let him pass, because I would have liked to have seen some more points just to run it up as much as possible. But, I mean, what did he end up playing, like the last 10 minutes of the fourth quarter? I mean, starters are done.
Right. So, yeah, it was well and truly written, as they like to say, by the time he was getting in there. So, not a whole lot for him to do. I wanted to I didn't tease this or anything, but I wanted to get to this while we're kind of on the college football topic. We'll talk some coaching carousel here, mainly Tennessee, and then we'll get into the Falcons, and we'll wrap up by talking about the SEC championship game. But what Tennessee has done here with their head coaching search is laughable beyond all belief. I mean, it's unbelievable that, you know, their AD, Curry, finally, you know, thought he had found the guy for the job in Greg Schiano, and then to let the fan base and let this upswell just completely derail that seems like a very weak leadership move right there.
See, I appreciate, though, now, I think the evidence of Schiano that he covered up some what he knew about Jerry Sandusky at Penn State is obviously flimsy.
It's ridiculous, and I also think that if you're a Tennessee fan and that's what you're trying to use as the reason you don't want him as your coach, it's terrible. Well, say what it is. You don't want him as your head coach because he's not John Gruden.
Well, it's disingenuous. There's no doubt about that. But ridiculous. I have no problem with a fan base coming together and saying, you know what, this isn't the coach in the program that we want to support.
Course. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, and instead of allowing it just these decisions to be made by, like, you know, who, Jimmy Haslam, because he's a rich guy who owns the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
I mean, they've won like 4 out of their last 50 games. They're 0-11 this season.
Yeah, you don't want to listen to that guy.
Yeah, so like, what the heck does he know? But, you know, you've got Tennessee fans, and these are people who are, you know, the ones that are now being typecast as they're just an angry Twitter vigilantes and a mob. These are people that either went to Tennessee. I know some of them didn't, but they some do currently, some have. They give money to the school, and they decided, you know what, this is a lousy, lousy hire, and we're not going to take it. And now as we're recording this today, the latest rumor is that Tennessee now has zeroed in on Jeff Brohm,
yep,
who would be an excellent hire. So the problem now from sitting here in Athens is Tennessee's probably going to, in an ass-backward way, since we're on a podcast, they're going to end up with a good coach now if they hire Jeff Brohm.
Yeah, and a lot of people thought T. Martin needs to be the direction they go in. You know, Les Miles reportedly put in a call to them, and it's just so strange how all of this has gone down. And, you know, for Tennessee to kind of just be throwing a bunch of stuff out there, you know, Mike Gundy looks like he used them for a raise. I mean, it's to go from Butch Jones to this situation, I mean, the leadership there is just really in question and, quite frankly, been really pathetic.
Well, where I would question the leadership would just be that they even targeted Schiano in the first place. And, you know, then it's like, well, do I even trust this guy, John Curry, to make the hire after that? But there's no doubt if and we'll use, like, Dan Mullen. We'll put Dan Mullen and say, let's say Dan Mullen had worked at Penn State, and there was a report that Mike McCreary in a deposition had said, well, I heard that
one guy from another guy told me that
Dan Mullen had said this to Tom Bradley and had witnessed this. Tennessee fan, you know that what Tennessee fans would have argued then? Oh, well, that was hearsay.
That's hearsay.
Yes.
Which is what it is
now.
It
is hearsay, yeah. So, I mean, I do, you know.
So don't give me that crap of the reason y'all didn't want him is because of all this.
Right. That's baloney.
It's crap.
It's because he was a lousy hire and would have been a bad hire too. But I don't have a problem with the idea of a fan base now collectively somehow having a voice in gathering and saying, you know what, this guy's lame, and this isn't a program that we're going to support if you hire him. And it puts pressure on the administration. And then even, you know, the reports even before it really got out of hand that Schiano was aware of all this and starting to second guess and question, okay, do I really want to take that job then?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's the thing. I'm pretty shocked that, you know, people are still talking to Tennessee at this point, because, you know, something like that seems like a pretty big red flag.
Right. But I mean, now, you know, now what's going to lead to is Tennessee's going to have to throw a boatload of money at the next guy. And I mean, Jeff Brohm,
I mean, they were offering Mike Gundy $7 million a year, reportedly.
Jeff Brohm, he would leave Purdue for Tennessee. But with that guy's got ties to Petrino. Nick Saban wanted to hire him in 2007, and he actually decided to stay at Louisville at the time. And he just, Purdue just went 6-6.
Which is very good for Purdue.
I mean, that's unbelievable. Yeah. And so he would be, I mean, I think he'd be a fantastic hire for Tennessee. And that was when all that Schiano mess was going on over the weekend. My first thought was like, well, I mean, now they've got a chance to actually end up with a much better hire than Greg Schiano, who would have been terrible. Because, you know, even beyond like the Penn State business, which is bad. But, I mean, there's a lot of pretty negative stuff that came out of his 2 years at Tampa Bay too.
The players hated him.
Yeah, from leaking a drug test of Josh Freeman.
Yeah,
they believed he was the one that did that. Then didn't they have some MRSA thing that happened down there too?
I believe so. Yeah, so you just got to be careful with all that stuff. And speaking of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I've got a hot take for you, Brame.
They're not good.
Well, that's true. But in transitioning to this Falcons-Buccaneers game from this past weekend, here's the hot take. Good things happen to the Falcons when they throw number 11 the ball.
Yeah, that would be accurate.
And, I mean, 253 yards receiving for Julio Jones with two touchdowns, only one of them for Matt Ryan, by the way.
Yeah, Mohamed Sanu still has a perfect career passer
rating.
He does.
What is it, 6 of 6?
He's 6 for 6 with three touchdowns.
Yeah, and I mean, that was a bomb. That was a 51-yard on a dime bomb. He could not have put that ball anywhere closer to where it needed to be.
Can I tell you, I I'm proud of this, I want a Super Bowl prop bet.
Jeff told me this yesterday.
That there would be over 2.5 players would throw a pass in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Now, you know Matt Ryan and Tom Brady were givens.
So you just needed one more.
Right, and my guess was because Atlanta ran that wildcat with him in the NFC Championship game. Mm-hmm. So my thought on taking that was that Atlanta was going to have – they were going to put Sanu in there and do something.
Have him throw a pass.
And then it turned out it was –
Amendola, I think,
or Edelman.
Or Edelman, one of them.
Yeah, it was one of them. But I went, hey, you know what?
You still
I'll
got
take it.
It
either way.
You still got it. It didn't matter. Yeah. And, that was a beautiful pass from Sanu. And for Julio Jones, he's the only player in NFL history with multiple 250-plus yard receiving games.
He's got three of them. I know.
Two of them against division opponents. One happened when he went over 300 yards against the Panthers. Was that last season, I believe? Yeah, it was last season.
I had him on my fantasy team last year, so it was
so
against
you
the
won
Panthers.
That week.
I do remember that game.
He had that, and I can't remember who the third one was against, but still. Just an unbelievable performance from Julio Jones. I thought Matt Ryan had a pretty good game. He threw a very nice touchdown to Julio Jones. Although Jones, man, he is just such a freak athlete because the way he contorted his body once he caught that ball, because he was going towards the sideline and it looked like he was going to go out of bounds, and he like stops on a dime and like twists his body around and extends the ball over the pylon. I mean, just what a freak.
Well, yeah, and you think back, too, like he had that drop against Carolina, and Atlanta probably wins that game if he catches a ball right there that he catches like 9 out of 10 times. Mm-hmm. But, when Atlanta was losing to the Bills and the Dolphins and mired in that little bit of a slump there, the one thing that I'd noticed about them statistically was their numbers offensively actually do pretty much resemble what they were doing a year ago. Mm-hmm. Even their yards per play differential, what they're doing on offense versus what they're giving up on defense, was about the same as it was last year when they led the NFL and almost won the Super Bowl. So it was kind of weird watching it. I mean, honestly, the thing with their offense is it was struggling early on was the defense wasn't forcing any turnovers. At one point this season, about a month and a half in, they had 3 takeaways, so they weren't getting off the field. And Atlanta had run the fewest plays in the NFL and had the fewest possessions in the NFL. So there was a lot like Atlanta's offense, yards per play and things they were doing that was statistically, the numbers looked exactly like last year's everywhere except the scoreboard. And so it was weird, like, you felt like there was some potential for Atlanta to still turn this thing around, and they certainly have. And the schedule still is about to be brutal. They got the Vikings coming up. You got 2 games still to play against the Saints, and you got to play the Panthers one more time. But they've definitely worked themselves back into a position where, you know, it's just about putting yourself and giving yourself a chance in the playoffs. And, you know, if Atlanta can do that, look out.
Exactly. And it's just one of those things with the Falcons now where, looks like they're kind of hitting that stride. You know, this is the right time of the season to do it. Big game coming up this weekend against Minnesota, and Devontae Freeman has been cleared from the NFL's concussion protocol, so that's good. Although not having Desmond Trufant this weekend would stink. He's in the protocol right now, and just based, it came on some friendly fire because he got hit by Keanu Neal, and that's when he got concussed. Yeah. So as good as Keanu Neal's been, sometimes he needs to be a little bit more careful.
Well, that's, you know, that's his reputation. He's just a hard hitter.
That's right. So while we're on the NFL here, before we transition to the SEC championship game, I did want to mention this because this is one of the greatest quarterbacks in SEC history and a player that's won two Super Bowls. The way that the Giants have handled this Eli Manning thing is an absolute joke. And the fact that they're – I get it if you're benching him for Davis Webb, you know, the Texas Tech quarterback that you're trying to see if he's got it. But you're benching him for Geno Smith, and you can't tell me that, you know, Geno Smith gives you any better chance to win than Eli Manning. And for them to have told Eli Manning, hey, if you want to keep your consecutive start streak going, we'll let you start, and then we're going to pull you. What a joke.
Yeah,
what
a complete load
of crap. I'm so glad he told them to shove it.
Yeah, I mean, good for him for that. I don't know what the – I guess really, like, this, there's no way that they're bringing this Ben McAdoo back.
No, that guy is a clown.
So he's out. Because, yeah, I mean, it makes no sense if you're going to – if you're ready to say, all right, you know what, we're going to have to go in a new direction. We know Eli's not going to be our quarterback in the future. So, but, yeah, then try out Davis Webb. I mean, who you just drafted. And that way there you could figure out then, well, because the Giants are going to have a good draft pick, whether or not they need to attempt to draft a quarterback.
Or make a run at one of the free agent quarterbacks. You know, you're going to have Kirk Cousins out there.
Yeah. Unless, I guess, can the Skins still franchise tag him again?
If they franchise him again, I think it's going to be for some like $30-plus million.
Yeah. So, I guess they can, but then it just keeps, that salary keeps going up, up, and up, and up.
But the thing about it is, too, with Eli Manning, you kind of feel like when he hits the free agent market, there are going to be teams interested.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, Blake Bortles likes to throw a lot of pick sixes. It's like, well, maybe they put Eli Manning in there. And
maybe Denver.
Denver will get another
Manning.
He could follow in his brother's footsteps there, absolutely. So I think that Eli Manning played this perfectly in terms of being like, yeah, screw you. I'm not going into the game just to keep my record going and then having, you know, you pull me. That's ridiculous.
I mean, the Giants have definitely done him wrong. There's no doubt. They had a terrible offensive line, which they didn't even address this offseason. Their offensive line was bad last year. They didn't do anything to make it better, so it was terrible this year. Plus, he lost Odell Beckham hadn't really played this season. They signed Brandon Marshall in free agency, and I think he's out now too. So they're missing all these targets for him, and their offensive line is a mess. Like, I don't really – like, to me, Eli Manning, I don't think he's a great quarterback. He does have those two Super Bowl rings, though, and he certainly deserved better from that franchise and what he's getting now.
And it's funny because I follow Kate Mara on Twitter, who was on House of Cards, as Zoe Barnes, who got pushed in front of a train.
Hey, spoiler alert.
If you haven't seen it by now, that's on you. But she was, like, retweeting a bunch of, like, she retweeted Brandon Jacobs. She said, Eli Manning, you're always going to be my QB, two-time Super Bowl champ. You can't make that bleep up, bro. Victor Cruz, the only quarterback that's ever thrown me the ball, talking about Eli Manning. So good stuff from Victor Cruz. And then she just tweets Eli and then a heartbroken emoji. The funny thing about that is, she is part of the family that owns that team.
Yeah, what is she? She's
she's the daughter of John Mara, I think is the guy's name.
All right. So she's the daughter of the owner?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Because then there's Rooney Mara, who is a cousin or something, but she's named after...
She's the sister of Kate Mara.
Okay, well, somehow she's also related to the Rooneys who own the Steelers.
Yeah, they both are, yeah. So that's why she's Rooney Mara. Which makes
sense. Kate just got one name?
Kate just got Kate, yeah.
Oh, okay. Whatever. So she's a sister?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And so she, you know, she's part of the ownership group, basically, and she's tweeting it. So,
yeah, I assume she'll inherit the team at some point, right?
Yeah. So, like, she's like, hey, why are you benching Eli?
Yeah, that's good.
But, yeah, so that whole thing is just funny.
I can't believe they haven't canned that coach yet.
Well, he's going to be out soon.
Yeah.
All right, last but not least here on this edition of The Crossover, the SEC championship game, the first time ever that this game is played in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. There's a lot of firsts in this game. First time ever it's played in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. First time that it is it's a rematch of the Deep South's oldest rivalry. In fact, the Deep South's oldest rivalry, Auburn-Georgia, has never been played twice in the same season. So this is the first time that that's happening, although why would it have been played, you know, other than this possibility?
Right.
So you have all that. And the winner of this game will be the first SEC team not named Alabama to make it to the playoff. So there's a lot of firsts associated with this game.
Yeah.
And Alabama could still make the playoff.
I noticed that they were sitting number five, right?
Yes.
They were hanging out there at number
five.
So
that's the thing. They're way ahead of Ohio State right now. If Ohio State beats Wisconsin, I still feel like Alabama's going to get in over them because that Ohio State loss to Iowa is just a big black eye.
Based on last night's rankings, that would be something to assume, but I mean, let's go all the way back to the very first ranking when TCU was sitting there number three
and
won like
out.
51-3 mm-hmm. and then ended up dropping to number five. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is about who, you know, we're about finding the four best teams and we're about finding the four best teams that'll give us ratings. Cause you could see like undefeated Central Florida is like just not, I mean, not even,
oh, yeah.
they're not even
they're
in
like
the top
14th,
10,
I think.
Yeah. Which is ridiculous. Cause like if you take these one loss teams, all right, Clemson, Miami, and, who's the other one?
Wisconsin.
Well, Wisconsin's undefeated.
Oh, you're
still.
Talking about one-loss teams.
Oklahoma. Yeah. Oklahoma being another one.
Yeah, yeah.
Central Florida would be favored over Iowa State, Pitt, and Syracuse, the three teams that beat them. They'd be favored over Iowa, too, the team that beat Ohio State by 31 points. So, yeah, I mean, this thing of Central Florida, they played a lousy schedule, and they you know, they just didn't play anyone any good. I mean, there's definitely some truth to that, but at the same time, those other teams are like that aren't undefeated that played in those power conferences, the teams they lost to, Central Florida would be favored to beat. But I digress. The thing I worry about Georgia though is if Georgia doesn't win the SEC championship game, they're probably going to play Central Florida in the Peach Bowl.
Yeah, I've seen some.
That's going to be scary.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've seen a bunch of different projections. That's one of them. Brett McMurphy did some projections yesterday, and he had Georgia and Penn State in the Cotton Bowl.
The Cotton Bowl.
That'd be interesting.
Haven't been there in a long time.
And then there's a possibility of maybe a Georgia-Miami in the Orange Bowl as well.
Yeah, so, want to get those two together.
Well, you know, that certainly would be interesting. But I just think that Georgia for this game and looking at the SEC championship, I just think they have a lot going for them that they didn't have going for them the last time. You know, Auburn, that was their first home game in a while, so there was that buzz building, and that environment at Jordan-Hare was crazy that day. Auburn won't have the home field advantage. They won't have that kind of, maybe revenge factor that they had from the last season when, you know, Auburn was ranked pretty highly when they came into Sanford Stadium last year and Georgia
10.
Beat them. So when you have Georgia has a revenge factor. And not only do they have the revenge factor, but Auburn may be playing it a little bit, hey, we already beat this team, so we don't have anything to prove. And they may take Georgia lightly just based on the fact that they beat them as badly as they did last time.
Well, and I mean, another thing, too, to keep an eye on is Kerryon Johnson's status.
That's right.
But, I do. I think it's a tough spot. I like the position that Georgia's in here. Because if you think about it from Auburn's point of view, they just demolished Georgia and Alabama twice in a three-week period. And now it's like, okay, congratulations on doing that. But if you want to win the SEC, now you have to beat Georgia again. And I think mentally, that's asking a lot. I mean, obviously, there's a physical toll that's been taken. I mean, Georgia's gotten to play Kentucky and Tech and had relatively easy wins over the last 2 weeks. So, yeah, there's some things I like there. And also, some key moments in that game involved the Dogs' special teams. The penalty that functioned like a turnover. Then there was the actual turnover on the muffed punt. Rodrigo Blankenship actually missed a field goal. So there's some areas there where I expect Georgia to definitely have things cleaned up. But, you know, the big question I think still hanging over this game is how much better will Georgia's offense be against Auburn's defense? Because that just came down to not being able to block them. And how improved on that front is Georgia going to be just 3 weeks later?
Call me crazy, but if Kerryon Johnson can't play, I don't see any way Auburn can win the game.
Well, I mean, it's a big bonus for Georgia.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, to me, this game was coming out of the matchup of Georgia's offense against Auburn's defense. Because even from the moment that game ended, I suspected Georgia was going to play Auburn again anyway, and I've been thinking about that for the last 3 weeks. And I feel like Georgia's defense had moments in that game anyway that, you know, things snowballed and eventually got out of hand and got out of the way, and it ended up looking like an ugly number against the Dogs' defense. But I've expected that Georgia's defense will have a much better showing Saturday. To me, it just came down to, you know, reconciling. I mean, how much better are we going to be on our offensive line against their defensive front to being able to do anything against them on offense?
All right. We got a little bit of time left here. I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. Prediction. Do the Dogs take down the Tigers on Saturday?
My early lean starting on Sunday, I saw the point spread first come out. It opened. It was the first line I saw was Auburn minus a point and a half. I guess it's now sitting around 2.5 or 3 points. And to me, that just I see where most people would think with the recency bias of what Auburn has done to look at that number and say, I mean, everyone's got to be backing Auburn on that with a number like that. But 3 weeks ago, Georgia was favored by a field goal over there. Mm-hmm. And now you're telling me Georgia's about a field goal underdog on a neutral field. So, I don't know. There's value there in the Dogs. I do think Georgia's going to win. And that's not just a homer pick either. I got a little feeling that it's going to be the Dogs' day.
Georgia, 30. Auburn, 27.
I feel it's going to be more low scoring. I don't think our offense is going to all of a sudden score 30 points on them when we could barely move the ball 3 weeks ago against them.
See, I kind of feel like Georgia will have learned some things.
I hope so if there's some adjustments to be made. But to me, it just came down. We couldn't block them. I mean, no matter what so you can figure out, well, we want to do this now or that. But, you got to still be able to block them at some point.
All right, we'll be back next week with another episode of The Crossover. It'll either be a very happy one or a very somber one.
Will Georgia be in the playoff next week?
Yes.
Okay. Well, yes.
That's the thing. They win on Saturday, and that gets them into the playoff.
But we're still behind Alabama, so what if we beat Auburn and they go, all right, well, Alabama's in and Georgia's going to the Orange Bowl.
Then I'm going to go find whatever room that committee's sitting in and burn it to the ground, Bray. All right, for Chris Bram, I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening to The Crossover. Back next week, another edition right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brain on 960theref.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.